Hello, my name is Alicia Poon, and I'm the director of the Indian Arts Research Center at the School for Advanced Research. It's always hard when we lose a member of our SAR family, and on Saturday, September 26, 2020, after a prolonged illness, we lost 2019 Rollin and Mary Ella King Native Artist Fellow Tim Adaki. Tim was a member of the Zuni tribal community and a potter. His goal while at SAR was to research the IRC Zuni collection and share his art and his passion with his fellow Zuni potters. I wanted to share one of my fondest memories of Tim. It was a few years back, and I had to be in Zuni on business. Tim had gently chided me the last time he found out I traveled to Zuni and didn't let him know, so this time I made it a point to reach out. Tim was always incredibly generous with his time and knowledge, and this time was no exception. After work, we watched dances together, shared a meal of chili and cheese with his wonderful friends, chatted endlessly, and explored his studio. The next day, before we had to leave, Tim took me and my colleague to some of his favorite spots. He was so enormously proud of his community and where he was from. It was hard not to be inspired by him and find awe in those things that he found beautiful. Those moments are precious, and I will always carry them with me. Last winter, we had the opportunity to talk with Tim about his work as part of a series of interviews conducted for a planned podcast series. In the conversation with host Thomas Grant Richardson, Tim shared a little about his heritage and his work as a potter. We are so honored to share the interview in tribute to this wonderful, wonderful artist. We at SAR are so privileged to have been given a chance to get to know him during his lifetime.
Kashi, my name is Tim Adaki. I am from Zuni Pueblo. I'm Frog Clan on my mother's side and Coyote on my dad's side. Everything that I found that I use, they're actual artifacts from the reservation. So, like this grinding stone, when I was out hiking years ago, I stumbled across it and I didn't know, at that time that I was going to be using it. So when I needed a hard surface to pound my clay on, because I was using the purple sandstone from Zuni and that was too soft. So when I was pounding my clay on it broke easily. So I was going to these sites at Zuni looking for metate, actually. So when I was looking around and I figured maybe the one that I found like years ago would work. So I went out there with a couple of friends. They helped me dig it out and bring it back home. And that's the grinding stone that you see here that I use today. And from there on that stone, I crushed all my clay and my pottery shards. I used pottery shards in my clay for temper, and this is well known for all the Pueblos that use it because they use it as temper, especially Acoma. You have to crush it down in order for it to meld well together with the clay because Zuni clay is too pure. If you work with it, well, what I heard from other potters, they said that Zuni clay is the best clay to use. And you don't need temper, but I found out on my own experimentation working with it's too pure. So it needs the grog. It's called grog, the crushed temper. It needs some of the grog. So when the clay is drying, the temper actually, when it's drying around it holds together. So it won't split or crack. So that's why it's important for me to use the temper.
Tell me about these two named styles. There's the Ashiwi style, which I'm probably not pronouncing that exactly right.
Ashiwi.
Ashiwi. So there's the Ashiwi style, and then the Matsaki.
Matsakya.
Matsakya.
Yeah, a lot of the archaeologists, they call it matsaki.
Okay.
Because of the pottery that's found there, they label it that way. And then it's pronounceable for them to say it instead of matsake.
So tell me about the difference. What constitutes those different styles? Is it the timeline, or is it like is one older than the other, or are they different methods or different visual styles?
All of the above. Because with the matsuake, it's older. It's pre-contact. Matsuake style was more influenced by Hopi designs. That's what a lot of archaeologists and the pottery people say, that it was influenced by Hopi designs. And my speculation of it is, yeah, I truly believe that they were trading a long time ago, and they saw these designs, and they probably thought, like, wow, this is a new form of painting that we could do. Wow, like, wow. And then they took it from there. And then it's been around for, I think, for a while. I have to look at my book on how old matsuake designs are, because it goes way back. It's pre-contact. So from 1530 to 1670. So that's how long this type of pottery was being produced. It's interesting because a lot of them say it's Hopi pottery, but actually it's not. This is kind of like the Zuni adaptation to the influence of Hopi pottery. And around that time, around in the Rio Grande area, there was also a popular design that was also labeled as Sukiyaki influenced. When, in my speculation, I think these were migrants from the Rio Grande that went west and settled in Hopi area. And like I said, that's just my speculation, on my own theory on how this design evolved. With the matsuake designs, you could clearly tell that it's a little bit more Zuni than Hopi, because a lot of it has elements from Hopi, like with the eagle tail feather designs and the abstraction of everything. It wasn't really portraits of anything. There would be a lot of feathery motifs, like this animal prints, a lot of abstractions, and the shape of it. How it differs from Hopi to Zuni is Hopi, their clay, their pottery is more yellow from that area, that region, and they used to fire with coal. Compared to Zuni, they did a lot of wood fire, and that's why a lot of the undersides are burned, because of the wood firing. That's what I call the Anasazi firing.
And then from moving into the Oshawi style, does Oshawi connotate a more a newer form?
Yeah, it does. It comes right around the time when matsuake kind of ended, because during the Pueblo Revolt, all the six villages, Halonawa, matsuake, Kakima, Kechipawa, Itiwana, they all fled up to the sacred mesa called Toayalani, and they stayed up there about 20 plus years. From there, I figured, you know, they didn't have like a lot of time to design stuff, and like they kind of made pottery just for utilitarian wear, and they didn't get really creative like how they used to before the Spanish came. And when they came down, that was the most historic event for Zuni, because instead of going out to their original home sites, they consolidated into one community. And that was the foundation of Zuni, everything, the religion, the clan system, the medicine societies, and some of the religious hierarchy that we have, such as like the Kiva bosses, the leaders. All that was founded when they came down from the Mesa. And that's where I for myself, find it really fascinating, because this is where the production of the Oshawi polychrome pottery started. They took what they used to make like 20 years before, and they started developing new designs once all of them got together. I guess they started sharing ideas. And I like to speculate an old lady, after coming down from the Mesa, sitting there, and they're making pottery, and then she just happens to say, like, you know, there used to be a really popular shape a long time ago, and then she was probably demonstrating a shape that was popular during her time, and maybe that's how that shape generated. That's just my speculation on how maybe that shape kept going, and that was the Oshawi polychrome shape. But what changed on that was they switched from glaze paint to a matte paint finish. With the glaze paint, I really don't know on how they were using and making it. I know they were using lead for the glaze, because it was pretty dominant during the 13th century with the Oshawi poly, the Heshotusha and Hawiku. And Heshotusha predates Hawiku by, I think, 200 years. But glaze paint was really popular back then. But when they came down from the Mesa, they switched from the glaze to the matte paint, and that's what I still use today, is the matte paint, and which is what I told you how is made with the spinach paint. So that's the paint that I use today.
One of the things I'm thinking about is Pueblo pottery. Well, I think all Southwestern native pottery has kind of like two lives today. There's this whole huge international art market for it, right? It's these beautiful pots that get put on shelves in people's homes just as an art piece. But there's also like an ongoing use of these pots from like super utilitarian to like, you know, cooking, to like this kind of other area of, sometimes there's ceremonial, sometimes they are just personally meaningful. You mentioned like the Oya maidens as this kind of performative thing, even though they are like commercial, they you know, still have an important function within the community. And I think about the Oya maidens because I think that for people outside the Southwest or outside New Mexico, that's like an icon of Zuni. Right, these elaborately dressed women with the pots on their heads. Are you thinking about, like, do you make these in any way with one of those worlds in mind? Are you intentionally making pots that you hope to sell to like a museum or to collectors or just to anyone? Or are you making a stew pot that will be used?
Both. For the commercial market and for home, because I would like to revive the old traditional usage of natural pottery, because a lot of people, they use the commercial cast slip bowls, and the only ones that I see using the natural naturally made stew bowls are the ones that still have heirloom pots. And those are the ones that are still being used, like with the summertime solstice ceremony when the ladies go feed. I kind of loiter around the the Kiva area just to see these bowls actually. And I've met a couple of families that still own some of these heirloom pots. And I would ask if it would be all right if I could take a picture of it, because I told them that, you know, I replicate a lot of these designs and would like to use it in my art and keep the designs going, because a lot of these designs, they, when I see them, they're so intricate, and nobody knows of these designs, like, you know, that they could design it this way. Like when I seen it the first time, you know, I was like, you know, I could have done that like that. So when I see a lot of these designs now over here at the SCR collection, I just get overwhelmed, like, that these ladies were so creative with their designs. And the stuff that they made were functional as utilitarian wear. And that's what I kind of hope that I would reintroduce, is the usage for it, to not be afraid to use them like how they were used a long time ago.
Am I right that you are trying to recreate some specific pieces here at the collection?
Yeah, it's the pot, Ashui pot number one, the first pot that got collected here. I'm trying to replicate that one in honor of that particular style of pottery that was transitional to Zuni. And like I mentioned, it's very historical in a way, because it tells the story of what I mentioned earlier of how Zuni got founded by becoming just one settlement, and the pottery that came from that time is the Ashui pot. So that's why I chose Ashui designs and the pottery to focus on, because that was the founding of everything for me with my art. And from there, it just kind of evolved, and I kind of got obsessed with it, looking for Ashui styles, and I didn't know there was a lot. And when I used to go out hiking, I would find fragments and pieces of Ashui polychrome pottery, and it was really different. It started to evolve to what Zuni pottery designs are now. So that's why I got interested in studying the designs, how it's evolved from Matsukya to the transition to Ashui, and then from Ashui to Gayapqua, from Gayapqua to present day modern Zuni designs. I take it as a blessing and an honor that I'm able to have this passion to go back and recreate some of these pieces, because it also represents, like I mentioned, a lot of history that came along with it when it was starting to evolve, you know, transitioning down from that one moment in time was after the Pueblo Revolt. From there, it took off to, let's see, how all the hardship that they went through, all the suffering, the drought, the wars, the infestations of the plagues that they went through. I mean, it evolved, the pottery evolved with them, along with them. It transitioned with them, you know, as going as far back to when they were going through all this, that it made me really think, you know, like a long time ago, that a lot happened. As the pottery also evolved with the Pueblo, because like I said, it was the founding of everything. It when they all came together, instead of going to their original home sites, because I'm pretty sure they had their own systems of religion. It's the same thing, but when they got together, they formed this, and then they formed this, and but it became one, just one unit, one system of how Zuni is now. So that's why I think about a lot when I just like look at the Mesa, or when I would read or hear something about an event that happened long ago, it would just like make me reminisce or wonder about, you know, how what these people were feeling, what they seen, what they went through. And that's where I get this feeling to, you know, like I should honor them, because if it weren't for their struggle, I wouldn't be here. And the pottery also is a way to honor them, because I'm remembering them through working with clay and remaking these vessels that were from that time period of when they were struggling.